Tonight we're going to learn the sixth parak of Avos, the fifth or sixth Mishnah, depending on the edition you have. G'dayla Torah yoysim in a kahuna umin hamalchus. Torah is greater than the kahuna, the priesthood, malchus, the monarchy. Shehamalchus niknes b'shloshim ma'alos. The malchus is acquired through 30 ma'alos, 30 advantages. V'akahuna b'esem v'arba. Kahuna, the priesthood, through 24. V'hatar niknes ba'arba imushmona devarim. And the Torah is acquired through 48 things. V'eluhain, and this is the list. So before going through this list, we need to understand, what does it mean when we talk about Malchus and Kahuna and Torah being acquired through these various means? The threesome of Torah, Kahuna, and Malchus, we're familiar with these three. It's the three crowns. There's Keser Torah, there's Keser Kahuna, Keser Malchus. We talk about the Kelim in the Heichal. You had the Mizbeach HaPanimi, you had the Menorah, you had the Shulchan. Each one had different representations. Actually, I said that wrong. It's the Shulchan, Menorah, and the Aron. And each of them had a Zer, they had a crown. So you have the three representations of Torah, Kahuna, Malchus, and these three are all compared or contrasted to each other. But how do you acquire Kahuna? You're born into the family. Either you're a Kohen or you're not a Kohen. There's no way to become a Kohen if you're not. If you're not born a Kohen, you're not going to be a Kohen. And Malchus, even Malchus. Malchus isn't for everybody. We know the Malchus was designated for Yehuda, specific family, through David, and so on. It's true, there was a Melech from Binyamin, Shaul HaMelech. Later, there was a split. There was Yeravim, and so on, the Malchus Yisrael. But essentially, Malchus is not open for everyone. And furthermore, what are the things that you acquire? Malchus niknes b'shloshim ma'alos, kahuna b'esem v'arba. What are these ma'alos? The Mishnah only enumerates the ma'alos that Torah has acquired. It doesn't enumerate the ma'alos that the other things. The 30 kinyanim for Malchus, the Ben Yonah says, these are all discussed, he says, in Maseches Sanhedrin. These are discussed in Maseches Sanhedrin, what the 30 ma'alos are. Maseches Sanhedrin talks about the halachas of a king. There are a lot of halachas unique to a king. A king has to write his own Sefer Torah. There's a mitzvah for every Jew to write a Sefer Torah. A king has to write a second Sefer Torah. He has to have two Sefer Torah. One, the standard mitzvah, and one, a special Sefer Torah kept with him all the time. It was a small, miniature Sefer Torah. And he would hold on to it all day, and it would always remind him of his responsibilities, and so on. A melech has limitations on how many wives he can marry and how much money he could put in his storehouse and how many horses could be in his stable. There are halachas that are relevant to melech. There are halachas of how he sits shiva when he's in avil. There's halachas about being involved in beis din and edus. And that's what's all described in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Ben Yonah says, yeah, that's the 30 milas shehamachos niknes behem. Essentially, it's the rules and regulations that apply to a melech as opposed to anyone else. The 24 things that kahuna is niknes. The 24 is the matnas kahuna. The 24 matnas kahuna. The 24 gifts to kahuna. There's truma, there's trumas ma'aser, there's challah, there's a whole list of things that you give to the kohen, reishis hageiz, pidyon haben, and on. That's the 24 things. So it's not like this is how you can purchase kahuna. This is not how you can become a kohen. It's halachas relevant to a kohen. And it's not even all the halachas. It's, I don't think these 24 refer to the din that a kohen cannot marry a gerusha, a kohen cannot marry a divorcee, a kohen cannot marry a geyeris. The pasuk says, Isha zayna v'chala lo yikachu. A kohen cannot marry a zayna, a chalala. And there's a name that some people are familiar with, a surname, Isbi. The name Isbi is a Kohen name. It's the Rashi Tevas, Isha Zayna Bal Yikachu. That's the Pasuk says. Can't marry, these are the women he can't marry. That's how the name Iz became into being. So those aren't even part of these 24. The halachas of a kohen not being metame, unless it's a close relative. Those are halachas of kahuna. It's not even in the list of these 24, to my understanding. These 24 are the malchus kahuna. So these are special things unique to malchus, unique to kahuna. And yet when it gets to the Dvarim Shehatar Niknes Behem, we take it much more literal that these are the ways to acquire Torah. G'dayla Torah Yosem in a Kahuna. This is a sign of the greatness of Torah, greater than Kahuna, greater than Malchus. They have these 48 things relevant to Torah that you don't have relevant to Malchus, you don't have relevant to Kahuna. Perhaps the theme here is that because Kahuna and Malchus is not for everyone, it has its limitations, but Torah is available to everyone. And there are 48 ways to kind of Torah, perhaps is trying to tell us that there are many different avenues and ways to learn Torah. If a person has all 48, so then he will excel. Person doesn't have all 48, perhaps they'll get some and not all, but maybe the idea of 48 is because it's very broad and available to everyone and accessible to everyone, and maybe that's why there are so many different ways that are going to be listed that the Torah is Niknes Behem. On top of that, when we go through the list of the 48 things, many of them are really global. In other words, some are very particular and unique to Torah. Other things are kind of universal ideals, universal goals on self-improvement. The list includes things like Nosei Ba'olam Chaveroi. Someone has empathy with somebody else. So we included in the list of things that Torah is Niknes Behem, but certainly that's the kind of thing that you would think is a good thing regardless of whatever endeavor you're pursuing. Anava, humility is in the list. Humility is universal, it's global. It's not limited, exclusive to Torah. Simcha, Tahara. Many of these things, I think, are not limited to Torah. These are different things that are components that make up the person, that make it easier for him to absorb Torah, to learn Torah and grow in Torah, but certainly these are things that are advantageous and beneficial in any context. So again, it's not, I don't think we are to understand the 48 Dvarim Shehatar Niknes Behem are things that are exclusive to Torah, because these things are pretty clearly universal good things. But we should understand the Tanakh is telling us that these things also play a role in Torah. Perhaps you would think it has nothing to do with Torah. These are good things in general, and it has nothing to do with Torah. And it's saying, no, being a better person does have an effect on how well your learning will go and how well you will understand Torah. Which leads us back to a more important point that we may have said in the past. Torah is not a subject. Torah is not a body of knowledge like biology and chemistry and physics and mathematics and so on. And you can't learn it that way. Torah is the Ribono Shel'Olam's Torah. Torah is the Ribono Shel'Olam's Torah. Torah Shel Asav, Torah Shel Peh are all from the Ribono Shel'Olam. This is our way to understand the Ribono Shel'Olam. This is our way to get to know the Ribono Shel'Olam. This is the way to express our love of the Ribono Shel'Olam. So the Tanakh is telling us that character traits will make a difference in how much you understand and absorb Torah. I imagine if someone is starting to be a mathematician or a biologist or a chemist, it wouldn't make any difference how much empathy he has to somebody else. It would make no difference if he's humble or not. I'm sure there are a lot of arrogant mathematicians and biologists and chemists. And it doesn't detract from their knowledge of their subject. It doesn't work that way with Torah. With Torah, if someone is arrogant, if someone does not have empathy, it will affect his Torah. And ultimately, I think that may be the driving force behind this whole concept of the Mishnah, listing these things, that we have to realize that Torah is not just a subject matter. The Greeks would have liked us to embrace that kind of thinking. The Greeks value knowledge, and there are Mepharshim that want to say that they had no problem if the Yidden would study Torah in that context, and that's why it says in Al Nisim that they tried Lahashkichim Torah Secha, to make us forget Torah. Because if in fact we would treat it like a subject, it would be lost like so many other bodies of knowledge that are basically lost today. I mean, if you're into literature, Chaucer, Beowulf, what do we do with these things today? The dialects, some people study it, but it's not something relevant to most people. And Latin, there are some people who are still into Latin, not that many. Torah would have ended up like some obscure study. Torah is not a subject. Torah is not a subject. Torah is the way that Klai Yisrael connects to the Ribono Shel Olam, and therefore the type of person you are has a direct impact on your ability to learn Torah. There's a direct connection between your character traits, your midos, and your learning Torah. It's fascinating, in this list of Memches Devarim, Chaim Avad Yosef brings a well-known remez, he says. There's a remez to the 48. It says in Pasuk, Eshes Chayil Miyimsa. What's the gematria of Chayil? Ches Yud Lamed is 48. It's 48. Because Eshes Chayil refers as a mashal to Torah. It's a mashal to Torah. I know everyone likes to think about Eshes Chayil as a husband saying nice things about his wife. But if you look in the Midrashim, that's not what it's talking about. If you take it most literally, it's Shlomo HaMelech writing an ode to his mother, Bathsheba, not to his wife. There's more to his mother. And if you're not going to take it literal, more like a mashal, like Sefer Mishlei is. So in the Midrashim, you find the whole Mishlei, the whole Eshes Chayil referencing Torah. And there is a point to notice that the Gemara says, Kama toiva isha toiva shatar nimshla eleha. You see the value of a good wife, that the Torah is compared to that good wife. So that's something that we should take out of that, that if we're using a good wife as the mashal for Torah, that must tell you something about a good wife, that she is up there to be the metaphor in this parable. Good question. Yes, and from us, there's many different explanations or interpretations of what Eshes Chayil is about. The idea of Avram being Maspid Sarah Yemein with Eshes Chayil is also an approach. But in this context, this is how he's using the remez. He said the remez of Eshes Chayil, Miyimsa, Eshes Chayil is Memches. That's Memches Devarim. That's where we began with. That's this idea that he wants to express here at the beginning. But there are numerous interpretations of how to understand Eshes Chayil. So let's take a look at this list of 48 things. The first on the list is B'Talmud. Learning. Torah is acquired through study. B'Shmiyasa Oizen, by listening. B'Arichas Sifasayim, by saying the words of Torah, arranging it on your lips. B'Vinas Halev, with understanding with your heart. Be'ema be'yir ba'anov be'simcha be'tahara, with a sense of awe and fear and humility and happiness and purity. So, when a person learns something, there are many different ways that people learn things. There are people who listen, learn that way. Some people are better at saying things over. All of this goes into, there's Talmud, Shmiyas Oizen, Shmiyas Sifasayim, different methods of absorbing and understanding what the Torah is saying, Bevinas Halev, taking time to understand what you're saying. And then there are the midos. You approach it with a sense of ema and yira. There are svarim that write that before a person learns every day, he should do tshuva. There's a sefer I have that lists an entire vidui to be said prior to learning. Because you're about to engage in the Baruch Hashem's Torah, you have to make sure that you're on the proper madrega. You approach it with a sense of ema and yira, with a sense of dread, with a sense of fear. A tshuva is appropriate before you start to learn. Ba'anava, humility, if someone is arrogant, they're not going to be able to really understand what Torah has to say. Shlomo HaMelech writes this about this in Mishlei as well, that the person who thinks he knows everything, there's more hope for a fool than him, because there's no way to teach him anything. He thinks he knows everything already. Besimcha, you have to have simcha. If a person learns with simcha, he will be able to grasp a lot more, a lot quickly than learning with atzvos when a person is sad or despondent. It's very difficult to learn without simcha. B'tahara, you have to learn when you're pure. So these two notes, besimcha, b'tahara. B'tahara, this is a part of a discussion in the Gemara. When is a person going to achieve more of his learning, a man? When he's single or when he's married? So one argument is that he could learn better when he's single because he has no responsibilities to support his family. The counter argument is that you learn better when you're married because you have a level of tahara that you don't have when you're single. When you're single, you're without a wife, maybe you're thinking about a wife, you're busy with that. When you're married, you're settled. And there's the Gemara's language is you're learning b'tahara when you're married. The Gemara actually encourages getting married young for this reason. And the idea of ben shmonesri l'chuppah, those who adhere to that, particularly the Hasidic world, feel strongly that's an element of b'tahara. The society we live in is not Hasidic, and we don't encourage 18-year-old boys getting married. But it's interesting, Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita still tells people to get married at 18. He's a very strong advocate of boys getting married young. The Rosh Hashivas in this country are very hesitant to follow his admonition that it's wrong to wait. I know there was a story of a kollel couple that did not have children, and they went to Reb Chaim for bracha. And I believe the fellow was the son-in-law of Rosh Hashiva, and the Rosh Hashiva didn't let the boys date young. And when the son-in-law came for a bracha, Chaim said to him, how can I give you a bracha? Your father's not the boy's date. It's Mevatel, Klai Yisrael, from Peravu. I can't give you a bracha for children. The next day, the Rashiva was on the plane to Eretz Yisrael to talk to Chaim because they were very shaken by what he said and discussed this issue about at what age American bracharim should start dating. I think the hesitation that many Rosh Hashivas have about boys dating younger is that they unfortunately witness a lot of divorces, and they're concerned if the boys are immature, what are you getting them into? I'm sure you're aware there's a whole movement out there that boys should start dating younger than they have been in the past. And there are those who feel that this will alleviate, in some measure, the Shidduch crisis. I'm not here to say whether there is or isn't, but this term of Shidduch crisis and the concern we have with it, so the disparity in ages between boys and girls and the numbers of boys and numbers of girls, so one of the suggestions is if the boys would start dating younger, then there would be less of a problem. Essentially, within every age group, there's basically equal number of boys and girls. There may be actually more boys than girls per age group. This is debatable. But once you change your years, the younger you get, the more there are. Essentially what the concern is. So there may be the equal number of 20-year-old boys and girls, but there aren't equal number of 20-year-old girls and 23-year-old boys. There are those who suggest that is the problem. So they're pushing the boys to start dating younger. So if they date closer to their age group, then you would alleviate the Shidduch crisis. And there are a number of Rosh Hashivas who have signed on these documents saying that's wonderful, it's great, the boys should start dating younger, which might really mean they shouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael after they finish learning in an American yeshiva. They should just start dating. Numerous Rosh Hashivas aren't hesitant to sign on that paper because they feel that they see boys doing that and then the marriage is a disaster. So you've traded in a Shidduch crisis to a marriage crisis. So that's not, it's like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Like, what are you gaining? Yeah.
Why would a year in Israel alleviate the...
It's not 1 year. It's not 1 year. What happens is the boys will go to Israel when they're 21, 22 and come back when they're 24 and then start dating.
But why would that couple of years alleviate?
So why don't they start dating at 22? They're saying start dating at 22.
I see what they're saying about the first. I don't see like 2 years in Israel makes a difference in their maturity.
Oh, you don't think so? You don't think a 22 and 20, you think a 22 is just as mature as a 24-year-old?
I think there's a maturity jump, but I don't see how that helps with the maturity as it, like, as it relates to the divorce.
Would you agree that a 20-year-old shouldn't get married?
Depends on the 20-year-old.
Oh, that's a very smart answer. Then an 18-year-old can get married too?
Depends on the 18.
Right. So you're 100% correct. I think in our society, most 20-year-old boys are not ready to get married. And maybe 22-year-olds are. And I think after a year or two in Israel, they probably are more equipped because I think once you are more independent and responsible for yourself, you learn more skills that are necessary for life. Yeah, but everything's taken care of for them. As when you're in American yeshiva, everything's taken care of for you. When you're in Israel, some yeshivas, everything's taken care of, but some more than others, but there's a lot, you're on your own. So, but there's definitely no question, I agree with you, that it ultimately depends on the person himself. Different, you know, there could be a 24-year-old who's not ready to get married, and there could be a 20-year-old who is, depending on his particular experiences and his abilities and so on. But I think that's why many yeshivas are hesitant to encourage younger bachurim dating, because there are enough issues. Unfortunately, I don't know the exact numbers, but I've been told there are staggering numbers of divorces in Shana Rishona in Lakewood. Staggering numbers of Shana Rishona divorces. Like, that's a crazy number, and it's very disturbing. So people involved are saying, you gotta put the brakes on this. We gotta do something about, something's not right. To see such a spike in divorces in the first year of marriage. Yeah?
Why wouldn't it be a better idea for the girls to wait longer?
That's for sure a good idea. The problem is they're not gonna. The parents are nervous. The parents are jumping off the roof already. What's gonna be? My daughter's not dating, she's not married yet. The parents are very nervous. Ideally, what would be wrong if a girl waited a little bit and she perhaps got some job skills to help her in life. there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think that the society we live in as a whole is concerned about saying, okay, no girls can date before the 21. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think people would abide by it. And also, it happens to be, again, if everyone would wait till the 20 to date, that's one thing, but that's not what's happening. And as girls in a class or in a community get married, the ones who are not feel very left out of society. And the older a girl gets single, the more difficult it is for her socially, and perhaps even religiously, and it becomes very difficult for her. Older singles, I know older singles who don't want to come home for Yontif. They don't want to be around with their siblings, with their families, if they don't have. It's just very hard for them. It becomes very difficult. Like the social pressure, whether it's in their own mind or real. I know that when they have class get-togethers, here in Detroit, and there are girls who are single in the class. The ones who are married have to be very careful not to yent all the time about their kids and their babies and their babysitters and everything else, because very often that's what happens. And the ones who are single just feel, why should I go to this for? So you become a pariah almost. It's very hard. It's very hard. So therefore, I don't think anyone's going to say that the girls should wait, even though they probably should. Now, as a parent, I see nothing wrong with telling a daughter who comes back from Israel, you're not ready to get married yet. You need some time. You need some time to get reacclimated to the United States, come back down to earth a little bit, find who you really are, get your balance back, your equilibrium. But there are girls who wait till they finish, you know, towards career training, and some girls who don't. It might help, but I don't think it's practical. I think that's why these rabbanim are pushing more that the boys should date earlier than that the girls should date later. But ultimately, it'll be the same thing. Also, it's a real question of, would a 22 or 23-year-old boy date a 23-year-old girl? Now, I talk to mothers, and a lot of mothers are very excited about that idea because they feel the girl is a much more established girl. The flip side of it is, sometimes people feel if the girl is the same age as a boy, maybe she will be more opinionated and more, I don't know if it's better than bossy, but the real question is, will a 23-year-old girl respect a 23-year-old boy? By the time a woman has established herself, she has her training, everything else, so it may take a little more for her to find someone she respects. Another way of putting it, and I've talked to many girls about this, there's a difference between a 23-year-old boy and a 23-year-old man. And if a girl understands that difference, she will not be interested in a lot of the guys out there. So some of them will actually date a boy who's 27, because that they find more compatible. So again, everyone has their shidduch, everyone has their bashert, but you have to realize as a girl gets older, it may be possible she's going to be narrowing the pool of boys that she would actually be interested in.
I think sometimes they reinforce, in Zemri, for example, they say, in Zemri, they kind of scare us a little bit, if you wait too long,
That what? You won't find a shidduch?
I
think the concern for a person to delay the process of dating could be twofold. The same things I just said. One, you may be narrowing the pool of boys you'd actually be interested in dating. And number two, again, you don't have to say who will date you. It's more who you're interested in dating is less. And second of all, I think as a girl gets older, I think she may be more at risk of distancing herself from her previous madriga. The older she gets, it's harder to keep your level of religiosity. I think that is pretty true. It's not always true. It's not absolutely true. And it's sure possible for someone to grow religiously single. But I've seen a lot of cases when it just doesn't work that way. The longer, further away she gets from her schooling and seminary, the more she gets more steeped in a different world, and she's a different person. So the seminary people are preaching that you should hurry to get married for that reason. That's my guess. They're concerned from the religious aspect. But again, I just think overall, you have to look at the whole picture, what you want to do with your life. If a girl tells me she's going to medical school, then it makes no sense for her to date until she finishes at least her undergraduate work. I've known women who do not date till they finish medical school because they wanted to be a doctor and they knew it would interfere. And then you have a really narrow world of who you can date. I was recently given a shidduch resume of a young woman who's an emergency room doctor. Never married. Single woman. She can't date just anybody. Right? She's in a niche looking for a specific type of guy. And there are guys like that out there, but you have to find the right one. So, I think that's what happens. You narrow your pool of who's suitable for you at the same time, and you're getting further away from your chinuch base. So again, with boys, this is a hot topic today. This idea of learning patahara, when do you get married, when's best to get married, early or later. Ultimately, it's. I think you're right. Every boy has to be judged for himself, his own merits. You have to know for the boy itself. So, but again, then there's no point for a whole kol kairei. They're basically trying to change the whole culture. Once upon a time, boys got married at 18, 19, 20. So we don't do that anymore. Maybe they say we should go back to that. I don't know if the boys are ready for that. I don't know if the boys are going to be good husbands at that point in their lives. So that's something to think about. Simcha. Learning Torah with Simcha. So, Reb Chaim Volozhin says, a person can learn a lot more with Simcha than he can learn with Atzvos. It's very hard to learn when you're sad or depressed, but you can learn a lot more when you are happy. This is a general klal, if there's Hashem b'Simcha, that you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're supposed to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Simcha. On top of that, if a person appreciates the importance of Torah and what Torah is about, so how can you not approach it with Simcha? But even more so, the Pasuk tells us that Torah is Mesameach. Torah gives joy to the point that someone who's in a mourning and Avelos cannot learn Torah. On Tisha B'Av you cannot learn Torah. Days of Avelos you don't learn Torah because Torah is Mesameach Lev. It makes a person happy. And these are days of mourning. You're not supposed to be happy. So therefore, we don't learn. Now, there are some things you're allowed to learn. In an Avel or Aleinu can learn halachas relevant to Avelos. On Tisha B'Av, we're allowed to learn the halachas of Tisha B'Av. We're allowed to learn Eicha, things relevant to the Chorban we're allowed to learn. But because Torah gives Simcha, Torah creates Simcha, so we can't just learn what we want on Tisha B'Av. There's a question in halacha. There are things that can be learned. Does that mean a person is obligated to learn those things on Tisha B'Av? And if he does not, it's Bittul Torah. Or on Tisha B'Av, there's no requirement to learn Torah, period. If you want to learn, this is what you can learn. Every day, there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. A man has a mitzvah to learn Torah every single day. And if he doesn't learn when he could, or when he should, then he's being mevatel Torah. It's a terrible thing. Bittul Torah is a bad thing. The Gemara says, if someone suffers any kind of yisurin, he should examine his deeds to figure out why this happens, and if he can't figure it out, assume it's Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah is an important thing. We have to stay away from Bittul Torah. Comes the day like Tisha B'Av, and there's a limited amount of things you're allowed to learn. Does that mean you're supposed to learn those things? And if you don't learn those things, it's Bittul Torah? Or do you say that there's no requirement to learn on Tisha B'Av because Torah is Mesameach, and if you want to learn, these are the things you can learn? This is a machlokes. It has to be a disagreement in halacha. It's a disagreement in early opinions. There's a Ritva talks about it. And I once heard Rav Avraham Chaim Levin Shlita Zal Gesundsein speak, and he said, why is there an opinion that it's not Bittul Torah? I mean, clearly, if there are things that you are allowed to learn, then you should be responsible to learn those things. You should be accountable if you don't. Why is it that there's an opinion that, no, you don't have to learn it all today, and if you want to learn, this is what you learn? Doesn't it make sense to say that if there are things that you are allowed to learn, that you're obligated to learn them? That's the question. And he said a beautiful answer. He said, the answer is like this. Torah learning creates simcha. Torah is mesameach. And that's why you're not supposed to learn on Tisha B'Av. The things that you are allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av do not create simcha. There's no simcha in learning Hichas Avelos. There's no simcha in learning Hichas Tisha B'Av. There's no simcha in learning Eicha. That's why you're allowed to learn those things. The things you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av are not things that generate joy. So Levin Shlita said, there can't be a mitzvah to learn Torah if there's no simcha in the learning. Because the whole point of learning Torah, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, is the simcha's Torah. If you can't enjoy the learning, then you can't be obligated to learn. The only time there could be an obligation on Torah is if there's a joy that comes with the learning. If there's no joy in the learning, there's no obligation to learn at all. And that's why there's an opinion that there's no mitzvah Talmud Torah at all in Tisha B'Av, because you can't learn with simcha. If you can't learn with simcha, that's not Torah. That's not the mitzvah Talmud Torah. The mitzvah Talmud Torah is to learn with simcha. The things you're allowed to learn are not simchadik. So you want to learn them. This is what you can learn. But there's no obligation to learn it because there's no simcha in it. So I went to a shiva after he spoke, and I said that years ago I heard a drasha from Reb Gifter all of a shalom. And Reb Gifter said this idea based on a pasuk in the Gemara Darshans. The Gemara says that you may not teach Torah to a Talmud she'eino hagun. A person should not teach Torah to a student who's not appropriate. If he doesn't have the proper character traits, you don't teach him Torah. Torah doesn't belong to him. And it brings a pasuk. What's the pasuk? The Gemara brings a pasuk to prove this point, that you don't teach Torah to a Talmud she'eino hagun, because the pasuk says, Lo noveh lekesil tainug. It's not appropriate to give to a fool pleasure. That's the words of the pasuk. Lo noveh lekesil tainug. There's no mention of Torah in this pasuk. The word is tainug, joy, pleasure. But the Gemara understood from this pasuk that you don't teach a Talmud she'eino hagun because you don't give a fool tainug. The Gemara is telling us the word tainug means Torah. So, when we say that simcha is one of the memchas tevaram tevar nikas b'hem, it's not just that you should be happy to be able to learn Torah, but Torah should create happiness. The essence of the study of Torah is that Torah should create simcha. And if a person doesn't enjoy his learning, there's something missing. Now, there are different topics, different things. Maybe he prefers something else, so people should learn what their preference is to learn. The Gemara says a person only learns where libo chafetz. He learns where he wants to learn. Everyone has an inclination to do something particular. That's great. But Torah, by definition, is mesameach leiv. So simcha is definitely part and parcel with Torah. And if it's lacking, his Torah is lacking. To learn without simcha is lacking in the Torah itself. The next three things in the Mishnah. Shimush chacham, dibe chaver, and pilbo ha-tamidim. Sitting by chachamim and learning from rebbeim, dibe chaverim is discussing back and forth with peers, and pilbo ha-tamidim is an exchange with a student. And this goes back, I believe, these three levels goes back to the concept that you may have heard over the years. The Gemara says that I learned many things from rebbeim, even more from my chaverim, but I learned the most from my Talmidim. There are three levels of interaction. And one is sitting by a Rebbe and listening and learning. One is having a peer to give an exchange back and forth. And the third is to have an exchange with a student. And each of these are different ways of learning. The Gemara tells us that you learn the most from the last. Years ago, I was discussing with someone the concept of teaching Gemara, teaching Halacha, and particularly when you're using a Sefer, whether it's a Gemara, a Mishnah Berurah, or Mishnah, whatever it is. He said to me, when you learn something on your own, or you learn with a Chavrusa, you're satisfied with a 95, 97, 98% comprehension. But when you teach material to students, you need 100% comprehension. It's insufficient to know it 97%, 98%, even 99%. Because they need to understand it, and for you to explain it to them that they should understand, it's not enough to get the basic gist of what's going on. And they're going to ask questions, but what does that word mean? But what is this idea? Any flaw in the logic, any problem, they're going to jump at what does that mean, though? What is that saying? Why does it say it like that? And on your own, you may ignore these questions and go on. Okay, I understand the idea, and I'm not going to get bogged down why it says this turn of a phrase, why it uses this expression, why it uses this pasuk. It makes sense, and you go on. When you're teaching it, You have to understand it 100%. You have to know exactly why each thing, and that's how you can convey it over. So I think perhaps that's partially why you learn more from your students than from everyone else. On one level, perhaps they'll ask questions you never thought of, but I think on another level, you have to understand it a whole new level before you start attempting to teach it or convey it. You know, part of it is anticipating the questions. A mechanech or a teacher, it's not enough for them to know the material. You have to be able to anticipate what the student will not understand about the material. What needs extra attention to explain? What needs extra focus? And again, that kind of exercise gives you a better understanding of yourself. You understand it better when you've broken it down like that.
So you're talking about the more important part is the preparation or the actual interaction with the students?
So I think it's probably more the preparation than the actual interaction. It could be the interaction. Again, the literal words of the Mishnah, Pilpochat Talmidim, refers to the exchange with the Talmidim. But the way I'm invoking the other Gemara, which just says I learned more from my students, I kind of wonder, is it specifically to, like I said, the questions they would ask that you never thought of, which happens. Every now and then, someone asks a question that I've never heard before. I think that's great. I write it down and I look for an answer. But I think a lot of it has to do with your preparation should be so much more when you're responsible to teach something than when you are just learning it on your own. You learn something on your own, so you understand it. If you have to tutor someone, it's a whole different experience than when you're learning it for yourself. And it's a whole different degree of Havana that goes into that. So perhaps that's included in this as well.